The loss of another luminary, this time in the discipline of photography.
Stay tuned. Hello, this is Stephen DeLuque, and you're listening to Ears on Art, a twice-monthly show dedicated to the exploration and enhancement of the visual arts.
Which is a segment of the news magazine Issues and Ideas, produced here at the studios of KCBX in San Luis Obispo. Today we rebroadcast an interview we did with photographer Joe Schwartz, who unfortunately passed away last month. Krissa and I went up to his Atascadero studio to interview the photographer when he was a mere 92 years of age. So here is the interview, first conducted in 2006.
I've always said I can look at a photographer's work and tell you what the photographer is going to be like.
That was Michael Shapiro of the Shapiro Gallery in San Francisco speaking of this month's guest. Co-host Krissa Hewitt and I interweave two separate interviews. We recorded a conversation with photographer Joe Schwartz. We also had the opportunity to speak with his agent, Michael Shapiro, of the Shapiro Gallery in San Francisco. We began today's show with Michael declaring that he can tell a great deal about the personality of a photographer by the imagery they choose to record. Joe has told us that the best introduction to his photographs is to read his book, Folk Photography, Poems I've Never Written. So now I read a brief quote from that volume in Joe's own words. I sought old images, remembering overwhelming, suffocating smells of the laborer's beer and whiskey breaths, the garlic sweat filtering through dirt-stained clothes, smoke from black cigars and hand-rolled cigarettes, filling all leftover space in an atmosphere where massive bodies of grim men communicated in shouts and scowled laughing. Joe continues, the search continued before and after World War II. My photos for me are symbolic glimpses of the past and art-like images of newfound folktale experiences. Like free souls, grown-ups and children dance with their conversations. Textures of the skin and clothing, creases and folds. People's peculiar stances are storylines well articulated. The streets are full of telling hieroglyphics, folk scenes to be studied, giving us a clearer understanding of the past and present. Folk strength struggling for survival against tough and miserable environmental odds. People perform in dance patterns on the pages of my documented street histories. Krissa and I recorded the interview with Joe Schwartz while viewing his substantial portfolio and eliciting his comments. And now, Michael Shapiro and Joe Schwartz.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Hello.
Can you just give us a brief synopsis of the gallery that you have in San Francisco? It's a photography gallery?
Yes, I've been a photography dealer for 26 years now. I focus on black and white, 20th century, and I've just gone private from being a public dealer that did continual exhibitions. I am now by appointment only. I'm old and I'm tired. I focus on very classic photography, which means nothing too contemporary. I don't do color. And I'm very interested in the social documentary photographers, including and especially the one we're about to discuss today, Joe Schwartz.
And how did you discover or come across or whatever the verb would be?
Well, I saw Joe's book. Somebody had Joe's book. And Joe is very surprised because it's a small publication quantity. It's essentially self-published, this book. And I saw it, and I tracked him down. I called him one day, and in this business, you don't get used to people being so available and so friendly as Joe was. Joe really felt like he wanted people to see his photographs. And I understood why when I saw the book and when I eventually saw the actual photographs, because, you know, Joe's really a freedom fighter, an early freedom fighter. He was convinced, if you look at his photography, that the races can live together in peace and harmony, as he did in Bedford-Stuyvesant in the 30s and 40s. Communities were mixed. And I think that the main factor was poverty, or close to it. That's what brought people to Bedford-Stuyvesant in the 30s and 40s. And That's the kind of social photography I love. I called Joe shortly before his 90th birthday, and he said, "I can't talk to you now. I'm making anti-Bush posters because I'm going to march." And I thought, this guy, how many decades is that, that he has been moving on his convictions?
Good afternoon, Joe.
Good afternoon.
And Stephen is here,
yeah,
of course.
Hello, Joe.
Has this been a lifelong pursuit of photography? When did it start for you?
Well, I would say, seriously speaking, it started when I belonged to the Citizen Civics Affairs Committee.
Which is about what year?
I would think that was around, I'd say around 38, 39.
Okay.
And I had just gotten married.
And so what was it about being part of that movement that
well,
got you started with the photography?
As you can see, in this little march here, which didn't happen very often, any kind of marches where you found black people marching at any time. You could see here this white fellow, and I don't know his name, but I remember her name, though, Mrs. Wright. And you could see the sign behind her there.
Which
Citizen Civics Affairs Committee.
Delegates, Citizens Civic
well,
Affairs
Committee. Well, she called
it.
That was her idea, delegates.
And what city are we in?
Well, we're in Brooklyn here.
Okay.
Later on, we had other demonstrations where NAACP, they came out and really begin to demonstrate. I think this was a union just forming. What they were interested in was in inclusion, meaning that they wanted to be included in unions and so on, be
right.
able to join unions.
Minimum
and,
wage.
And that's right, and different things like that.
Michael, when did you first become really interested about carrying his work and representing him?
Well, immediately. I mean, I ran after him. I was intrigued by his imagery, but not only the civil rights imagery, but we'd call that today, but just of all sorts. I mean, I love the way he's captured children, and I especially love like what he's most known for are his urban pictures.
Mm-hmm.
It became interest to me actually through a friend who's a black guy. His name is Johnny Atkinson. He introduced me to a lot of different things, which were very strange to me. He introduced me to where people lived, black people mostly, and I had never been to visiting any black people at all. He brought me into the homes, and I thought they were a lot of broken down homes, seen photographs, and they were interesting. And I thought they make interesting subject matter as far as art is concerned.
Had you had some training about how to use a camera at this point, or was this all
not
just,
very much? No.
Just things that you taught yourself along the way.
Crummy little camera, but I don't know. As you go along, you get interested in things. You get to try to learn things. That's one way of learning, I think.
I've always said I can look at a photographer's work and tell you what the photographer is going to be like, personally. Mm-hmm. And this is a real tribute to what Joe's about. I mean, Joe is just a wonderful, accessible, peace-loving person. He is a freedom fighter, and I don't use that word loosely. I truly believe that. I mean, how many white people were photographing the black community in the 30s and 40s? There are a few, and they were committed leftists, showed African-Americans in their natural setting. That wasn't happening. Racism was ubiquitous. I mean.
Later on, I was working in a union shop. I was just learning the printing business and so on. It was actually lithographic business. I used to hear some really terrible things during that time, and I was already beginning to argue the idea of whether black people were people or not, you know. It was really that kind of discussion.
Right.
And I had to prove these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, maybe there's one way of proving is by, taking photographs. And
Were you able to publish any of your photographs at that time?
No.
Joe's a hero of mine, and I not only convinced him to let me take a lot of his work back to the gallery. I was a perfect stranger. I had good references, but I didn't even think of offering them. He just accepted me. And I not only brought them back, but I started sending Joe checks and telling him the type of collector that was buying these works. Joe Schwartz's work is of interest to a particular kind of collector who is looking at social documentation. In my experience, it's the same kind of collectors who have bought Walker Evans' work from me, Dorothea Lange's work from me, Prussian-era photographers, just chroniclers of daily life of people struggling, humanity to his work. My collectors went crazy over his work, and it just blew my mind, and Joe was speechless.
Nobody was running after the work in 1945. So.
Well, no, nobody was running after any photography. I mean, you have to imagine that photography became was a collectible to only a very few people in the early 70s. Joe didn't establish himself until this book, because he was a printer, had a printing business in Los Angeles, and all the photography fell to the side. Thank God he decided to gather these things together, and now he's in a lot of different places and in a lot of great collections.
For edification's sake, the book was published in 2000.
When did that process of sort of understanding what you had actually captured come to you?
There was no process. It wasn't anything that I was looking forward to. You know, I wasn't thinking of writing a book or doing anything like that, which a lot of photographers do, you know. But later on, I became conscious of the fact that I was the kind of photography I was taking might be something worthwhile to have. Of course, that's during a long stretch. I began to realize that I thought I had something that a lot of photographers just didn't have. I saw a lot of things that were happened to myself, for that matter. You know, I lived in places where there were cockroaches and rats and all of that sort of thing. So, you know, I lived in areas like that. This later on became a sort of a mission on my part, where I wanted to prove also that the housing project was a very good thing. I've lived in a housing project. My family did, and it was a wonderful thing.
When you were taking these photographs in this very candid manner, did you ever find that someone, yourself, standing with a camera, tended to interfere with the action that you were trying to capture or the mood? Did people stop and become aware of you, or were you
no.
able to?
It's happened.
Or the little girl's painting that didn't seem to be noticing you at all.
Oh, no. So. There are sometimes here's a little young lady who saw me and just is questioning whether what am I doing in the first place, you know. And these kids, maybe they caught on to the idea, or they were talking like that to begin with, you know, and I just happened to get in.
Sitting on
the
bench,
very
engaged in conversation.
This, of course, was something else. This is part of a larger photograph, and that's also part of the housing project.
It's a photograph of a young girl who's looking back at Joey with kind of a self-confident defiance in her eyes.
That's right. Actually, she's questioning it. And she's a good little artist, actually. I wish I could find out where she is now.
I'd like to have a little of your response, the candid work that is what he does. How much of a pioneer has he been?
Joe is a member of the Photo League. A very simplistic characterization of the Photo League photographers in New York were they were regular folk photography. I mean, they were documenting street life, and they were generally very leftist. A lot of them were Jewish leftists from the five boroughs. There's actually a book that was published called This Was the Photo League, Compassion and the Camera from the Depression to the Cold War. It's just another book, a newish book. I think it's been out a few years. And Joe's in this book with all of his colleagues. And I've got to tell you that Joe is one of the few remaining original members of Photo League. there's not a whole lot of photo leaguers around anymore. They approached photography with great humanity and honesty in kind of a very humble way. Of course, there was a formal sense, a feeling for correct composition, and you know, there was an artistic sense too, but I think they were documenting things, and a lot of them were political photographers.
Mm-hmm.
Joe certainly was. One picture that comes to mind of Joe's is the picture of the African-American woman who is picketing in front of Woolworths with a sign that says, "Woolworths won't hire colored salespeople." Very, very political photograph.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look through his book, you'll see that there are a lot of those.
Yes, certainly in terms of NAACP activities that he was picking up on.
He went to the marches.
Yes,
right.
He did. Yeah.
He was part and parcel of what was going on. I mean, he had the same mindset. I mean, freedom fighters are freedom fighters. Joe is a Jew from New York. He's not only a Jewish freedom fighter. He would fight for anybody. He was certainly involved in the civil rights fight.
Mm-hmm. And the importance of the historical documentation that they enabled us to now look back upon these periods of time in our history. They were doing this out of a social conscience.
Right, right. Absolutely. And that's a very important point.
If you have just joined us, you are listening to Ears on Art. Today's guests, in interwoven interviews, are artist agent Michael Shapiro and, up next, photographer Joe Schwartz.
This program first aired in 2006. Sadly, Joe Schwartz passed away last month.
That's the Kingsborough Housing Project mm-hmm. behind him, and he's one of the politicians. I don't know, I think he was a Reverend Harton.
1948.
That was just during the Third Party Movement, actually.
It was very interesting. I'm looking at this next photograph here of some young men trying to get or move
right.
a tree that's got a huge root ball and everything down at the bottom, obviously a fairly heavy thing.
Yeah, well, I just think we're getting ready to plant that.
Yeah.
Just like the flag was being planted,
well,
the same idea.
And it was interesting because
I'm
looking at this picture that's got this pole of a tree and these men grappling with it, and the first thing I thought of was Iwo Jima.
That's
and here
right.
I look down at your title and
that's
it says
right.
like Iwo Jima, 1940s. So
what was interesting about it, of course, we in white and black working on it, you know. And now this is still the housing project. But you know, this is what happened. And I was glad to see that.
And you've titled this one Good Neighbors, and it appears as we go through these that what you're definitely capturing is that sense of community that was happening in these housing developments. Am I accurate?
Absolutely, right. Well, this is Brownsville, which was a very mixed neighborhood of Jewish and black people in the same neighborhood. This was a photo of an evangelist in New York City.
Out with the tambourine.
Tambourine and a neat little grouping there with
a little collection jar.
Yeah, right. The collection jar is there.
There's so many great pictures. I mean, there is a picture that he calls the evangelist, and it's an older woman who is preaching the gospel, and a lot of people are gathered around her.
Yeah, I just saw this a second ago.
It's called The Evangelist, Union Square Park, Manhattan, 1930s. It's an African-American woman holding a tambourine, and she is preaching the gospel out there. And she has a little dish there to benefit from
it. Yeah, her briefcase and collection jar.
And a lot of white people to the side of her. Oh, not only white people, side of her looking at her. And it's just a wonderful order. It says a lot.
Hear the sound in this one. I mean, the kind of rhythm, the chant, the whole kind of thing that probably would be coming out of her mouth.
Well, that's a great one. There's so many good ones.
And then the one on that same page next to it titled She Saw Slavery.
Yeah.
And this woman probably in her 80s or 90s sitting on a bench.
That is a wonderful photograph.
Mm-hmm.
One that I'm looking at here, this one is the one with the two nuns crossing the street.
I look at that picture and I love it also for its form. It's got this organic shape to it, waiting for a streetcar.
Correct.
Yeah, well, there's certainly a beautiful form to a nun's habit.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly speaks to a black and white photographer's vision.
The two nuns almost look sculptural.
Beautiful, soft form.
Mm-hmm.
Two nuns crossing the street.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting photo in that I saw these nuns, and I ran around the New York block, and that was a long block, you know, until I came to a point where I stopped and I saw them coming, and I got on my knees and I took the photo, and she just turned as I took the photo. You can see that. Mm-hmm. Actually, what I was thinking as I ran around, I was thinking, oh, I want to get kingly kind of, I don't mm-hmm. know how to express it now, for the buildings to look that way, you know, mm-hmm. had that look, and they had that look. I had it all planned as I went around there, yeah.
So
I didn't plan for her to turn around, though, or look at me, though. That I didn't plan for.
But that was your reason for going low, so that you were angling up.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I had it all planned to do that. So I get the buildings the same way, you know.
It's amazing your memory of each of the photographs that you've taken and
yeah.
and what was going on at the time and what you were thinking.
Oh, I remember that. That I can't help but remember a thing like that, yeah.
A lot of these I've never seen prints of. Mm. So some of these Joe didn't have old prints of that he showed me, but he must have had. Well, he certainly had the negatives to make this book. There's piles of things, and I am lucky enough to be able to go through those piles from time to time.
I know. His house is amazing. It's just the volume of the amount of material stacked in corners and in boxes. And
we're standing in a room that is just full of photos everywhere we look.
It's a bit overwhelming, actually. It's of historical figures, everyday life, and as I said earlier, in the inner cities, some are factory scenes, an astounding body of work.
Boy, can I have some of those cars?
Really?
We're looking at 30s.
30s and 40s sitting here. Being at the right place at the right time and having the initiative to grab a camera and to start recording it.
And obviously to know how to
mm-hmm.
record it.
So. Mm-hmm.
Well, which brings up another subject. I mean, I think we should mention Joe as printer, as darkroom technician. He is nothing short of marvelous in the darkroom. Well, Ansel Adams put it best when he said, you take your negative and you interpret it like a conductor interprets a musical score. It depends on what mood you're in. When you go into the dark room with this negative, it depends on the temperature of the chemicals and the kind of paper you use. You have a lot of choices, far more than, say, today than Joe had in the 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Right.
But Joe's managed to produce a remarkable group of photographs of great quality, great printing quality. And that's important to know. He's not only a photographer, he's a printer.
Yeah, many of the modern photographers just have printing houses that handle their negatives for them and do the printing for them.
It's very involved. I mean, you can spend weeks on one negative mm-hmm. getting it your satisfaction.
Actually, I remember there was an exhibit up at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, I think it was Ansel Adams, and how he had developed the same negative over a 20 or 30-year period and the different effects that he chose each time that he did it. And that was fascinating because that had never occurred to me before, to take a particular negative and develop it in a slightly different way to get a completely different effect.
The papers change over the years. Mm-hmm. The photographic paper companies have consistently denuded the papers of silver. And these papers get colder, which may work for commercial photography, but for sort of warm feeling, more profound imagery, a warm picture, I would say, I'm being presumptuous, but that's what I would want.
Mm-hmm.
I would want a warm paper. And it's so great to go into a room of Joe's work where all the papers from the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and it's like a little oven in that room.
There's something to me always so captivating about this style of photography, this very candid approach that seems to capture people in a way that gives them their dignity and beauty without them necessarily ever being what we would call beautiful people.
Well, that's the way I felt about it.
And it really gets captured because the beauty comes through in the wrinkles, in the look, in the mm-hmm. in something that's there that's much bigger than anything that we're going to see on a magazine cover these days.
I'm glad it's there. Mm-hmm. Believe it.
What is this collection behind Stephen?
Well, they're a conglomeration of different things. This is the family of this Captain Molzak. And he was the first black captain in the U.S. uniform and so on.
And this, again, is in the 40s?
Yeah. This was my wife who was taking a Martha Graham
technique. The dance technique, yes.
And she was working for Martha Graham at that time.
There's concentration just written mm-hmm. all over that body.
That's right.
How do I That's do this right. and how do I hold this position? And
right, the whole thing. I was interested next? In the dance myself. Most everything I consider a dance, in a sense. There's my mother. We lived in an attic. That was typical of her making food and mm-hmm. so on. Chopping up spinach, actually.
Mm-hmm. She a bowl would, on her lap.
And mm-hmm. Yeah. Of course, that was, do I have to smile?
Uh-huh. Universality of children.
Yeah. This was at the Cinnamon House. I was there for about 3 years, but I wasn't an addict. I was interested in finding out something about addictions and mm-hmm. so on. Mm-hmm. I found out a lot.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Probably more than you wish to.
Well, no. Learned a lot about the human being. That was at a Martin Luther King meeting, and I thought that was wonderful. Mm-hmm. It's an attitude,
uh-huh.
see?
Yeah.
And that's the things I like to photograph, is attitudes of people, you know, and you can see that.
You've chosen to, almost exclusively, at least from what we've seen so far, stay in black and white
yeah.
film. Can you talk a little bit about what that means for you, as opposed to making the documentation in color?
I don't know. I would say it seemed like it was closer to the real thing. Sort of, I don't know how else to put it. It just, that's the way it was, you know. I am a black and white person, so to speak.
The answers are in the pictures. The
Absolutely.
Proof is in the pudding. And these are great images, great prints. From a very significant period of time.
You have been listening to Ears on Art, a twice-monthly program dedicated to the exploration and enhancement of the visual arts, produced here at the studios of Public Radio KCBX in San Luis Obispo. We would like to thank today's guests, photographer Joe Schwartz and Michael Shapiro. This is a rebroadcast of an interview first conducted in 2006. Joe Schwartz passed away last month at the age of 99. Joe remained active in his pursuits of peace and the fight against poverty and social injustice. He could be found at most art events, a witty conversationalist with an insatiable curiosity. Join us next week as we continue the rebroadcast with some additional reminiscences from his friends. Krissa and I would like to take the time to thank all of our listeners as this program marks its 14th year on the air. It has been an immense privilege to be allowed to speak with so many incredibly talented artists. It is conversations such as this one, the preserving of history, that are especially rewarding. This is Stephen DeLuque, and for Krissa Hewitt, thank you for listening. Be sure to join us on the next show for continued conversations with Joe Schwartz and Michael Shapiro.